Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today we're going to take a look at the hoax of Islamic terrorism. From 9/11, the global war on terror, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Iraq and Syria, to San Bernardino and the corporate media. It's a big agenda, so let's begin. It all comes back to 9/11. 9/11 was the pivotal event that has fast-tracked the pre-planned agenda for full-spectrum dominance by the U.S. as laid out in the PNAC document, or the Project for a New American Century document, called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they state that Americans wouldn't buy into the military buildup that would be needed for them to implement their plans without a new Pearl Harbor. 9/11 was their pre-planned and orchestrated new Pearl Harbor, exploited to demonize Muslims and to preemptively and illegally attack Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, Pakistan, and more, and their justification for taking away our civil liberties. I would encourage you to do a little research on the PNAC and see for yourself. There's a new three-part film out about the PNAC called A Very Heavy Agenda by Robbie Martin. The 9/11 Truth Movement has documented so much evidence disproving the official story of 9/11 and exposing the government and media cover-up of the facts that if you still believe the government and controlled media's account of 9/11, which, by the way, is a conspiracy theory, you simply haven't been paying attention. If you're out of touch with what really happened 14 years ago on 9/11, then you're probably being taken in by the latest lies and deceptions. For the present situation in the Middle East and in our country to make sense, you really need to get it that what you've been told by the government and the media about 9/11 is a lie, and they continue to push those lies. Once you get that you've been lied to about 9/11, and I know that most of my listeners do get that, you'll also see that the global war on terror is a hoax, a deception, and a way to get you to support and finance our government's illegal and immoral military agenda. And now here's James Corbett of thecorbettreport.com on March 21st, 2010, talking about some of the more recent supposed domestic terrorist attacks.
Lawyers for four men indicted for allegedly planning to bomb a Jewish center in Riverdale, New York, have revealed that the entire scheme was concocted and planned by an FBI informant in the group. The defense in the case has filed a dismissal motion, citing the claim that Shahid Hussein was a paid FBI informant whose mission was to radicalize disaffected Muslims and recruit them to join a fake terror plot. The motion suggests that Hussein was provided with as much as $250,000 for the case and had a government-provided BMW, Hummer, and other cars to make him appear to be a well-funded foreign terrorist operative. The government well knew that their case had been a government-inspired creation from day one, and that the defendants had not been independently seeking weapons or targets, the dismissal motion said. This development was by no means a surprise to analysts, who have noted that every major domestic terror plot in the United States over the last two decades has been aided, abetted, funded, supplied, and often created by paid government informants. 8 years before bombs and nanothermite demolished the World Trade Center in New York, the original 1993 World Trade Center bombing was exposed as an FBI operation. The man who supplied the bomb-making materials to the bombers, a former Egyptian army officer named Imad Salem, was revealed to be an FBI informant who had been told to deliver the materials to the plotters. The original plan was to deliver fake materials so that the bombing could not go ahead, but FBI agents overseeing the case ordered him to give the real supplies to the plotters, and the attack went ahead, killing six and injuring 1,042 people. In December of 1993, the head of the FBI New York field office, James N. Fox, issued a blanket denial that the FBI had foreknowledge of the attacks, and the media stopped reporting on the story. Since then, the actual recordings between Salem and his FBI handler, Special Agent John Antichev, have been released.
He was start already building the bomb, which is went off in the World Trade Center. It was built by supervision from the Bureau and the GA, and we was all informed about it, and we know that the bomb start to be built. By who? By your confidential informant. What a wonderful, great case.
Well.
And then he put his head in the sand and said, oh, no, 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 that's not true. Okay. Well. It's built with a different way in another place, and that's it.
Well, don't make any risk. You know, I'm just trying to be as honest with you as I can.
Of course, I appreciate that.
And as far as the, the payments go and everything like that, they're there. I guarantee you that they are there.
In 2007, convicted Oklahoma City bombing co-conspirator Terry Nichols was able to file an affidavit in U.S. District Court in Utah, alleging that the OKC bombing and Timothy McVeigh had been directed by a high-ranking FBI official. The affidavit indicated that Nichols had been trying to go public with the information about McVeigh's FBI help for years, but had been prevented from speaking to the press. He had also contacted former Attorney General John Ashcroft with the information, but never received a reply. In 2006, it was revealed that the so-called Miami 7, who had allegedly been attempting to strike targets in the U.S., including the Sears Tower, had in fact been organized, led, and supplied by a government informant who had convinced them that he was an Al-Qaeda operative. The case disappeared from the headlines after it became apparent that the men were in fact a group of unemployed underachievers with below-average cognitive abilities living in a warehouse. In 2008, the so-called Fort Dix terror plot was also revealed to be the single-handed creation of two FBI informants who created a plot to stir six foreign-born Muslims into taking on the U.S. Army at Fort Dix. The plot was foiled when the dim-witted conspirators asked a Circuit City employee to transfer their Jihad training video onto DVD and asked police for maps to the Fort Dix Army base. Analysts are expecting this latest revelation to also be quickly swept under the rug by the corporate media, and for the next large-scale domestic terror bust to be reported as if none of these previous incidents ever took place.
And that brings us to San Bernardino. As many of you already know, there's an amazing coincidence of drills being conducted right before these terrorist attacks happen, and the drills mimic exactly what happens. So, for example, on 9/11, there were many drills being conducted concerning America being attacked by terrorists. There were drills at the Boston Marathon bombing, drills prior to the Oklahoma City bombing, drills the morning of the 7/7 bombings in London in 2005, which took place at the exact four same locations and the exact same times as the real bombs. And there were drills on the morning of the recent Paris attacks, and there were drills prior to the recent San Bernardino shootings. Now, it seems to me that this is a huge red flag that another major deception is underway. In a December 7th article by Countercurrent News called "Eyewitness to San Bernardino Terror Attack Still Says Three Tall White Men Did It," the article goes on to say, quote, "The controversy over what really happened in San Bernardino last week is just beginning to heat up. Right after the lawyers for the alleged attacker's family said that they do not believe the suspects did it, yet another eyewitness to the attacks maintained that the real attackers were three tall, athletic, Caucasian men in tactical gear. It looked like their skin color was white. They appeared to be tall," the eyewitness said. Investigators with the ATF recovered police-issued firearms from the alleged shooters. So what we've been told about the San Bernardino shooting so far is already starting to look suspicious and even fraudulent. So now let's move on to take a look at ISIS. Here's what Professor Michelle Chusadovsky has to say in a recent article called "America's War on Terrorism: The Truth Will Prevail." It was posted on the website globalresearch.ca on November 27, 2015. And here goes. Amply documented but rarely mentioned in mainstream news, ISIS is a creation of U.S. intelligence, recruited, trained, and financed by the U.S. and its allies, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Israel, and Jordan. Those who ordered the bombing campaign are those who are behind the Caliphate Project. The Islamic State militia, which is currently the alleged target of a U.S. NATO bombing campaign under a, quote, counterterrorism mandate, is supported covertly by the United States and its allies. What this means is that the ISIS terrorists are the foot soldiers of the Western alliance. While America claims to be targeting ISIS, In reality, it is protecting ISIS. The air campaign is intent upon destroying Syria and Iraq rather than going after the terrorists. There's lots of evidence that the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Israel, Qatar, and Jordan are behind ISIS, but you won't hear much about that in the controlled media. Here's what author, journalist, and former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under the Reagan administration has to say about the media.
You can't trust the Western media anymore.
And here's what he has to say about ISIS.
Washington has been, until the Paris attacks, very protective of ISIS. Indeed, it's a Washington creation. Washington created it. This has been admitted on television by the former director of the Pentagon's Defense Intelligence Agency, who says flat out, yes, we created ISIS. And Washington, of course, is using ISIS to try to overthrow Assad. So it's hard to see how Washington's agenda can coincide with Russia's. And it's hard to see how France's agenda, if they actually believe ISIS was responsible for the Paris attacks, it's hard to see how France could go along with Washington. And so we see here some potential breakup in NATO, which would be a good thing.
ISIS took credit for the recent Paris attacks. But since we know who's really behind ISIS, what does this really mean? Here's an interview from November 2015 on Russia Today with political journalist and author Geroid O. Kolmain to provide some geopolitical clarity.
Well, let's now talk to political journalist and author Geroid O. Kolmain, who joins us from Paris this evening. Thanks very much for joining us again on RT International. You're in the French capital. What's the mood and atmosphere in the city right now?
We're being told that there's a state of war and a state of emergency. We've had this before. We had this in January, and for several weeks we had nonstop sirens and nonstop chatter on the radio about the threat from radical Islam and terrorist groups and so on. And so we're having a kind of a replay of that, but it has been, I think, accentuated, and we're going to have an intensification of the media campaign, which is essentially a propaganda campaign to make people in France fear Muslims. We need to be clear about the origin of the war on terror. The war on terror is, I quote, orchestrated from abroad. These are the words François Hollande used to describe this terrorist attack. Well, the attacks that have been continuing to destroy Syria, to massacre its population, have also been orchestrated from abroad. They were orchestrated by NATO, and they've been carrying these attacks out against the civilian population of Syria for 4 years now. And this is a terrorist campaign that is also orchestrated from abroad. And people in Europe need to understand that there is what is becoming global that is being waged against civilian populations in particular. It is a form of neo-imperialism and neo-colonialism, which aims to divide and conquer European and Middle Eastern and African and the world's population, for that matter, and to make them submit to a global order that does not serve most of the people, that very elite, very small, tiny, and particularly tyrannical ruling elite. There is no war on terror. There is a war that is being waged using proxy groups, terrorist proxy groups, and they are being used against nation states who are resisting US and Israeli hegemony, and they are also being used as a means of disciplining forces in Europe. In a period of mass unemployment and austerity, you now have terrorist attacks being committed by terrorists funded, armed, and trained by Western intelligence agencies. There is no such thing as ISIS. ISIS is a creation of the United States. We know that from official sources of the US military themselves. Declassified documents from the intelligence agency have confirmed that. And the French are now, the French government is now attempting to drum up support for more military intervention in Syria. And what they want to do is they want to get in on the game. The game is almost lost. The Russians have routed much of the Islamic State, of Islamic militants coming into Europe disguised as refugees. That will destabilize Central Europe, and the French government wants to get in on the game in Syria and prop up those so-called moderate rebels. There are no moderate rebels, of course, in Syria. There are Al-Qaeda and ISIS militants, terrorists who have been beheading people, eviscerating people, absolutely creating chaos and genocide right across the region, and this does not serve the Syrian people or anyone other than the Western corporate elites and their geopolitical interests.
What do you expect France to do now in the light not only of Friday's terrorism, but 10 months on from Charlie Hebdo? It's not going to ease up on what it's doing, is it?
No. Much depends on how the French public will react. We are being bombarded now with a media propaganda campaign. It's just nonstop talk where we're told not to go out in the street. We're supposed to be fearful and keep quiet and so on. I think there is going to be a campaign against dissidents in France. They're very worried about the new media that has emerged in recent years, and they are very worried about the alternative media. So I think there you will see, we saw this actually after the attacks in January, you will see a conflation of terrorism and dissidents. So one of the tools which the mass media uses to discredit any kind of rational questioning of the established order, and particularly the war on terrorism, is to deride those who would question the war on terrorism as conspiracy theorists. And I think you're going to see a crackdown on so-called conspiracy theorists and websites that actually publish rational and honest analysis of what is happening. So you're going to see more of that type of intellectual terrorism, which is already at boiling point in France. I mean, it's got to the point now where you have professors in universities who are being intimidated. You have school teachers who are basically being fired for even suggesting that there may be a link between French imperialism and terrorism. There was one case recently, for example, of a school teacher who almost lost his job when he suggested there might be a link between French foreign policy and terrorism. So we are going through a period of deep intellectual terrorism, and of course these random terrorist acts, which are a form of low-intensity civil war. I think that the current crisis, the refugee crisis, which is really a form of coercive engineered migration, because they could have easily have been prevented, this form of coercive engineered migration is going to make this, and it is going to create the conditions of civil war. It is a natural consequence, of course, of globalization, of financial capitalism. It leads to a breakdown of society. And the only way in which they can kind of keep everybody down is by a policy of divide and conquer. So you're going to see situation where you've got a very much a Wahhabized working class in France. They're being Wahhabized by the allies of the French political elite, the Saudi Qataris. They're building Wahhabite mosques all over the place. And that is going to Wahhabize the youth, and they're going to be then used as pawns, if you like, in much bigger geopolitical wars, proxy wars against Russia, proxy wars against Iran in the Middle East, and so on. And that is going to create massive social unrest. It's going to divide working people against each other. And the only people are going to actually benefit from this are the war contractors, the military industrial media intelligence complex. So in whatever way you look at this, I don't know who exactly did committed this attack and this atrocity, but the real people who are responsible, whether directly or indirectly or consciously or unconsciously, is the French government, because they have been complicit in terrorism in the Middle East and all over Africa. And that needs to be understood. And if we don't understand that, this is going to continue and it's going to deteriorate. We will find ourselves in a situation under martial law, if this continues. So it really needs to be analysed and understood.
Can I pick you up on the issue of migrants and refugees? Because one of the terrorists appears to have been a French citizen, another a recent migrant to the country. What do you think this will do to France's policies towards the migrant crisis?
Well, I think there is sufficient evidence to suggest strongly, in fact, that the current crisis, I mean, the migration crisis is something that is ongoing, and there are different waves. You've got different waves coming up from Libya, you've got the ones coming up from Syria and up through the Balkans. But the current kind of refugee crisis, as it were, is what I would refer to as coercive engineered migration. This is a term used by Kelly Greenhill, a US academic, who wrote an interesting book on this, whereby she shows that migration can be used as a tool by one state to destabilize another state. In this case, it's definitely being used by the United States and Turkey to destabilize the Balkans, Mitteleuropa, which would be Hungary, and of course Germany. And the reason, the geostrategic reasons of this, are basically go back to classical geopolitics, which is Halford Mackinder's theory of the world, of dividing the world island. That is to say, you divide the Eurasian Peninsula from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea. You create an intermarium there so that you prevent German and Russian unity. And that is why Germany essentially is being kind of overrun with people who are themselves victims of globalization, but they are now being instrumentalized and used as weapons of globalization. And this is one of the key contemporary strategies of US imperialism. You use the consequences of globalization as further tools to further globalization. And I think there is not going to be, there is no policy in Europe to control immigration or anything like that. I think that the key question here is not actually controlling immigration. The key question is stopping this geopolitical destabilization of Europe. Some countries are attempting to do that. Hungary is attempting to do that. Bulgaria is attempting to a certain extent to do that. In other words, trying to find out who's an actual refugee and who isn't. They're prioritizing women and children, for example, in Hungary. That's a rational approach. But of course, Viktor Orban of Hungary is being demonized by the European Union for his insistence on implementing the laws of the European Union and of the Hungarian nation state. Here, you're in a situation where the French government is totally subordinate to US dictates. This is a country that has been completely taken over by US imperialism, just as Germany. And France doesn't really have a foreign policy. It does whatever Washington tells it to do.
And again, that was author and political journalist Geroyd Okolmane in a November interview on RT. So, we have all of this state-sponsored terrorism being blamed on Muslims to move the U.S. and its allies' political agenda forward. But Russia has entered the picture, and its air support for Syria's fight for survival against ISIS has changed the duplicitous game the West has been playing. The Russians are actually getting rid of ISIS. What's the West to do? Well, for starters, perhaps shoot down some Russian planes and try to make it look like it's actually fighting its own creation, ISIS. Here's part of an article that was posted on the Activist Post on December 2, 2015, called U.S. Gives ISIS 45-Minute Warning Before Bombs Runs Out of Ammo Against ISIS Target. And it was written by Brandon Turbeville. And here goes. Ever since the Russians began dropping real bombs on real ISIS targets in Syria, the United States and NATO have been forced to engage in a two-sided propaganda campaign that swears opposition to ISIS while simultaneously doing everything it can to facilitate and protect ISIS forces on the ground. It has also found itself in the bizarre position of trying to facilitate the death squad army while at the same time attempting to play catch-up to the Russians in at least the appearance of bombing ISIS. Thus, when Russian forces truly hit at one of the sources of ISIS funding, the captured oil being shipped from Syria and Iraq to Turkey, where it is purchased by Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan's son, Bilal, the United States must then engage in its own faux bombing campaign against ISIS oil trucks. Yet, instead of actually bombing the trucks, drivers and all, and putting them out of commission permanently, the U.S. bombing campaign takes a form of a laughable formality that involves a 45-minute warning to the oil convoys that a U.S. bombing campaign is about to take place. The warning involves an airdrop of leaflets to the tankers that read, "Get out of your trucks now and run away from them. Warning, airstrikes are coming. Oil trucks will be destroyed. Get away from your oil trucks immediately. Do not risk your life." The justification is that the drivers of the tankers might be civilians and not actual ISIS members. Of course, there's no mention of the fact that in any other context, an individual who renders material support to terrorists, particularly in the form of driving tankers of stolen oil in a war zone that will be used to fund the terrorist organization, would be killed without question under that designation. There's also no mention as to why these potential civilians received ample warning, but true civilians received no such courtesy. It is truly a pity that the U.S. did not drop leaflets to the million Iraqis it has killed over the last decade, or the thousands of Libyans that died at the hands of NATO. Still, one only need look at the numbers of destroyed oil tankers racked up by the U.S. in comparison to the Russians to see a distinct difference. The United States, according to Colonel Stephen Warren, has taken out only 116 tankers since the bombing campaign began, while the Russians have eliminated over 1,000 in 5 days. Remember, until the Russians began bombing the oil tankers, the United States had yet to launch an attack on them. Even more laughable was the response that came when the U.S. military was questioned as to why they were unable to destroy more trucks than they did after such a highly publicized strategy. According to Army Colonel Steve Warren, the American jets simply ran out of ammo in the process. Quote, the goal was to destroy every truck there. They ran out of ammunition before they were able to do that. But the desire was to destroy every single truck there, he said. Even with the new attempt to be seen as truly aimed at fighting ISIS in the eyes of the gullible American public, the U.S. has been forced to use videos and photographs from Russian bombings to purvey across the mainstream media due to the fact that American strikes on ISIS oil trucks are so rare. And then here's an article posted on Press TV on November 22, 2015, called Media Manipulation. U.S. shows footage of Russian airstrike against ISIS as its own. And I'm just going to read you parts of that. So here goes. On November 16, the U.S. military claimed it had destroyed 116 tanker trucks carrying stolen Syrian oil from those fields, but failed to provide video evidence. 2 days later, however, the Russian Air Force destroyed some 500 oil trucks and promptly released footage of the airstrike. On November 19, a program dubbed PBS NewsHour used the Russian footage and passed them off as U.S. airstrikes without revealing the true source. And speaking of lies and the media, I'd like to correct a lie that Donald Trump recently told when he claimed to have watched thousands of Muslims cheering in Jersey City, New Jersey on 9/11. Even CNN said that didn't happen. But what they didn't tell you is that there were actually people cheering in Jersey City on 9/11, but they weren't Muslims. They were five young Israelis in a white moving van who were observed taking photos of themselves in Liberty Park against the smoking ruins of the Twin Towers in the background. They were arrested and released a few months later, and at least two of them were Mossad agents. To learn more about them, just do a search for the dancing Israelis. So all of these wars in the Middle East, falsely justified by the phony war on terror, only made possible by a lying, complicit media, could be ended quickly with the exposure of the truth about 9/11, which proves that Muslim terrorists didn't do it. If you don't already get this, go to ae911truth.org and start your own research. And read Christopher Bolin's book, Solving 9/11. The lives of many people may depend on it. I'll end the show with some quotes by Paul Craig Roberts. And here goes. The war on terror is a hoax. We don't have to stand for this. We can turn off Fox News, CNN, NPR, and all the rest of the prostitutes who lie for a living. We can cease purchasing the useless newspapers. We can demand that the police spy state that was created entirely on the basis of lies and deceptions be rolled back. Are the American people really such washed-up sheeple, such cowards, that they acquiesce to a police spy state, the foundation of which consists of nothing but lies told by criminals and repeated endlessly by whores pretending to be journalists? If so, the American people are not a people who any longer matter, and they will continue to be treated by Washington and by their local police as people who do not matter. And finally, unless the American people come to their senses and expel the Washington warmongers, war is our future. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.